the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. Doing it from home today, getting to everybody. Finally, everybody gets to sit and relax at home. Usually I'm the one in the station having to push the dials and all that. Not today. I get to sit at home and have a beer. Should be a little more entertaining. Lots to talk about. Lions. We're going to talk about a couple different Detroit topics today. Touch on basketball. Can't wait to hear what Jay's bets of the week. Jay, you and I are not doing well right now when it comes to our players' championship bets.
We're not, but I got some action tonight to kind of hedge those losses before they incur. So don't worry, I got you. We're gonna sprinkle everywhere today.
Jay's like the 2008 housing market. It's a lot of micro, but it could all come crashing down at once. We don't know yet. The oh no coming from the stat man, who's literally spending his time calculating these bets to show Jay just how much the next loan is gonna cost. Rusty, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, and I just want to remind everyone that something else that you just sprinkle a little bit of everywhere is manure as fertilizer. So careful where you're spreading your shit.
Absolutely. Speaking of shit, let's get into a shitty situation here. Couldn't lead the show off any other way because I think we've been speculating, that's the beer, about this for the last couple weeks, trying to figure out what they're going to do. I think everybody had an assumption that we knew the one way this was going to go. And guess what? It's the Lions. They went the complete other direction. Lions choosing not to franchise tag. I'm going to call him star wide receiver Kenny Galladay because I think that's what he is. Probably going to be the number one receiver in free agency once he hits. Before we could do anything else about this, I mean, Russ, just first reaction to the fact that they are choosing not to tag a guy who I think is probably the most pivotal person on this offense heading into a new regime.
I was disappointed at first because I hate it from an asset management standpoint that you had a guy who's arguably, you know, at least fringe top 10 wide receiver in the league. And he's walking away for, you hope, a compensatory pick next year. Mm-hmm. And hey, hopefully it's a third round pick and your ledger's even, I guess, but you've spoiled the talent. As I dug into it, though, I guess I'll bring it up because I want to make sure everyone else had the same epiphany. Kenny Galladay is going to be 28. Mm-hmm. As established as Michael Thomas is, Michael Thomas is only 8 months older than Kenny Galladay. And we've seen, you know, $20 million plus per year production out of Michael Thomas. We've seen out of DeAndre Hopkins, who's only a year older than Kenny Galladay. We've only seen one, maybe a year and a half of that out of Kenny Galladay. Looking at it through that lens, I'm not sure I'd be willing to pay him the $20 million or so that it looks like he's asking for to put him in that class of those more established receivers. I probably still would have franchise tagged him because that's like $16 million, though. Like that, that seems wild to me that he's just walking for hopefully something a year from now. That's, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to ask your opinion on the potential signing of former Saints wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders if they decide to go that route. Because if you have a problem with 28, you definitely have a problem with 31. Jay, initial reactions, Kenny Galladay, number 19, not back in the Honolulu blue and silver.
I'm shocked. I was hoping they would do the tag because it's not a long-term approach. But it reminds me of you can't have a fancy-ass chandelier in a shanty. And right now the Lions are that shanty. And we do not deserve nice things right now. So I'm kind of flipping at that. I'm almost happy because it takes away a fourth quarter drive. It has a potential to turn into a win, and we're not going to have Stafford either conducting that fourth quarter drive. This is the, you know, I try to envision things on a slope, on a graph, if you will. Russ does it every day. I'm just doing it in my head, which doesn't make sense half the time. This is the downturn. This is the low point. You can't have a chandelier in a shanty, and it sucks, but we don't have a system for him to even shine in. So he's got to go somewhere else.
It's like putting a chandelier in a whorehouse. I get it. I understand. Which,
what?
By the way,
whoa.
What? By the way, stick around later for a very, very funny whorehouse story. That'll leave every guest coming back.
Excellent. Excellent.
Was that a pun? Just that about coming back?
No, it wasn't intentional, but you can make whatever you want it to be. I'm with both of you, though. Look, I would have loved to have seen Kenny because it just it's holding on to talent where there is obvious talent. At the same time, it is that fact of, sure, we could franchise tag him. We could re-sign him. But like Russ said, we haven't really gotten like six straight years of elite Kenny Golladay. Like, we're sitting here trying to say we see shades of Calvin and we see shades of all these other receivers. But the thing is, name the last time Calvin didn't play in a game. Like, that guy played every week, every time, knowing full well he was going to get treated like a tackling dummy out there. We don't get that with Kenny. Kenny doesn't have a problem saying, I'm going to take a day off. I'm going to, you know, I got to try to get healthy, which you want a healthy player, but at the same time, at some point you got to accept, okay, you're going to play with a little bit of a sore ankle, man. We still need you to win football games. I had this weird epiphany in my head the other day, and I want to get your guys' opinion here. Obviously, Bob Quinn, Matt Patricia gone, but when they were here, they just seemed to be collecting former Patriots. Little concerned that now that we have the new regime with these two, and the first thing they do is go out and get a former LA Ram, Jay?
I don't want to write that story too quickly. I feel like the way that they approach the whole transition into the team, that we can't make that broad base assumption yet. Yeah, do they have some familiarity with Jared Goff? Sure. Maybe he's, you know, I hate the adage also that a change of scenery player, but if that exists, then maybe Goff can live up to that and it's a good turnaround. Either way, he's not going to win us the division. So, again, more placeholders, more patiently waiting at the DMV until you get your championship license.
Rusty?
I mean, I'm similarly not as bothered by it, partially because they got an asset for taking him on. So it was a, hey, Holmes knows the risk better than most other people would in his position. So, hey, you brought him on, you bring on another asset, it's okay. If they go into free agency and they drop big money on a former Ram or a former Saint that is aging and that team is letting them go, a la Jamie Collins, yeah, then I'll be plenty concerned about the direction, but not so far. Hope lives another day.
But obviously, Kenny goes away. So now the conversation has to be, is there a guy in free agency? Is there a trade to be made? Are those first-round picks that we're talking about having for the years to come, do those all of a sudden become a little bit easier to part ways with if we can get an offensive weapon in camp? Or are we looking at a potential 7th overall pick being a wide receiver if the right one is sitting there?
Yeah, I think the 7th overall pick wide receiver, that just became a lot more likely to happen there. It lets them completely unlimited go, hey, I'm just going to take the best guy there. If that's a wide receiver, cool. He's going to be a fixture for the next 10 years, at least, hopefully. You want to have talent so you can be picky. But at the same time, it's nice that no matter what you do, it's going to be a good fit of this team. Because back to the shanty example, if I need drywall and I need wood flooring and I need stairs, I'm going to take the one that I get the best value for and we're going to move on. And it's nice there. I'd like to see them not. I mean, if you weren't going to pay Kenny, don't go out and pay somebody else big dollars to come in. Go build through the draft. And when you're ready with your actual quarterback, then we can drop the dollars down.
Yeah, I agree similarly. I mean, they need to comb through these potential draft picks and understand where they're weak at position-wise and then go grab that weakness through free agency, but don't overspend and make sure they're not a fossil. I mean, and that's like easy math, right? But they have to do it particularly well. This is important for Dan Campbell and company. So, I mean, I'm not wild about offense in the first round again. Don't hurt me. Don't crush me on that day. I want to have a good draft day, okay? If they're listening right now, don't crush my hopes. Just give me something good.
I'm completely split right down the middle. I'm one of those people that if the right guy is there and is available at that, and it is an offensive weapon wide receiver, I have a hard time saying look past that because we need it. But at the same time, if you can go out and you can address this in free agency, look, you're not going to get some, young top receiver, but you can get one of these guys who, like I mentioned, Sanders, someone who's, he's got some miles on him, but at the same time, he kind of replaces Marvin in that veteran wide receiver in the locker room for these young guys that we're going to bring in through the draft or through free agency. And it gives Goff an established person who he knows, almost like I said last year with Amendola. Stafford knew Amendola was a safety net. And over time, Hockenson became that safety net. I think it gives Goff another veteran guy in the locker room that he can build a little bit of rapport with as we go. But yeah, I mean, if someone like Devontae Smith is sitting there, I think it's very hard for this team to look away unless the number one guy you had on your draft board is still available.
Right.
So we'll have to see and see what they do with it. I feel there, and I think we all do feel, there are a lot of other needs that have to be addressed before wide receiver on this team. And I'm with you, Jay. I really don't like the idea of offense in the first round, but unfortunately, I think everybody is going to agree with me on this. Our offense is the only thing that's going to be a way for us to win this year, because it sure as hell isn't going to be a defense with a first-year head coach. And a basically all I'm expecting are the Detroit Lions defense to look a lot like the Detroit Pistons. Not a lot of guys going to be left over. Not a lot of guys going to be left over. So we'll have to see what happens. Little beer sip there. Speaking of the Detroit, the Detroit Pistons, I just mentioned not a lot of guys left over. Well, it's official, guys. There are no guys left over on the Detroit Pistons from last year. Obviously, Derrick Rose traded to the Knicks a couple weeks ago, and now it's official. Blake Griffin took a buyout. He is now gone, either expected to or has signed with the Brooklyn Nets. I also love the fact that now they're saying that Andre Drummond might be getting out of Cleveland and headed to the same exact team. So we might be getting the Pistons front court in Brooklyn here soon. Obviously, Blake had to go. He wasn't really contributing a lot to this team, if at all. This is a team that's trying to find its identity with a bunch of young and new guys, and I think is doing a pretty decent shot of that. No one expected this team to win titles. No one expected this team to just run roughshod on the East. It wasn't going to happen. But what we didn't expect, there are some serious gems sitting in that locker room right now. I am a huge fan of Isaiah Stewart. Reminds me a lot of a guy we're going to talk about here in a couple of minutes. Sadiq Bey, I'm a very big fan of this guy. I see a lot of talent in these guys. I'm not going to try to pronounce the one dude. I'm just going to call him Svi because that's all I know how to say it, because his last name's too much for me. We'll let the Croatian do that. the throat clear. But Blake's gone. But Russ, I want to ask you this, because I saw this, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, this is a number for Russ. This is a number I know Russ has in his notepad. How do you feel about the fact that right now the Detroit Pistons are paying over $100 million
yeah.
for two guys to not be on this team? It reminds me a lot of Moneyball, where they said the Yankees are paying half your salary just for you to play against them. That's basically what we're doing.
Yep. Good old Josh Smith. What's up, buddy? How is this nightmare mm-hmm. still going on?
If I remember the numbers correctly, Blake is getting 56 and Josh Smith's getting something like 42 or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's
right. To not be on this team anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty horrendous. I mean, it really goes to show you, I know at least one of those was Stan Van Gundy special, bringing Blake Griffin in. Josh yeah. Smith might have been as well. Kind of goes to the Kenny Golladay thing. Don't overpay for an aging asset that you can potentially replace. Now, Kenny Golladay's not in the same bank as the rest of them, because everyone saw Blake Griffin's decline coming because his knees were garbage. He was very, very talented, but when your body's already starting to break down, pay attention. People should look around. And Josh Smith, loading that front court, they played him at small forward because he had Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond in the rest of the front court, and you just had nobody that could shoot from outside. Who could have thought that that wasn't going to work out? It's just poor decisions, and it really shows you how being conservative with your spending, especially in free agency, unless you have a defined plan, don't do it. Don't spend just to spend, because you end up spending $100 million for people to play for other teams.
I feel like Russ was just doing a PSA for my fantasy team waiver wire budget because
you're already $0.
Yeah.
How many weeks did it
actually
take?
By the way, to give you the perspective here, Josh Smith was actually the last task of Joe Dumars.
Oh, damn it, Joe.
Dumars was done in 13. Van Gundy came into office in 14. So Dumars' last hurrah after building a team that we will remember the rest of our lives will always be remembered for Ben Gordon, Charlie Villanueva, and Josh Smith.
So I've got a question then.
Okay.
I thought the purpose of Blake getting bought out was that he was not on the books. Do we owe him just this year, or is there how'd that work out?
So the buyout, no, you still have to pay them, and it's an agreed amount, however much it is. Sometimes the player can agree to a reduced amount from what he's currently owed, but you're essentially giving him a big fat check and saying, see ya. You're gone. You can go make whatever, and whatever he makes in his new and on his new team is subtracted from what you owe him, whatever that distance is. But that's always, almost always, just a minimum contract. Like we've seen with Dwight Howard 100 times. That he goes, he signs a vet minimum, and the other team's paying for him, right? So he doesn't have to be paid twice. And it helps his new team, but it hits your cap throughout the subsequent years. Kind of like buying out Abdelkader, spread out that cap hit.
Yeah. So we take on an old dude who's injured. We make him the feature player on our team. He excels on nights. We don't trade him last year, and this is what we get at the end of it. Like that's
so to give you the math though, Jay. In July of 2017, Blake Griffin signed a 5-year, $173 million contract
with the Clippers.
With the Clippers. Now, I don't know what that broke down to, but I've also read through, and I don't see anything in the way of an extension or anything like that. So I don't understand how his contract was that front-loaded that there was still $56 million left to try to buy out. But it is what it is.
Man, I was annoyed just that we didn't get anything. I'm more annoyed we're still paying the guy. I thought it was like, hey, shake hands, goodbye. Like, you're off our books. Nope, we still pay you. Awesome.
It was his player option for next year that really drove it up. Because that's it's a high dollar, and it's pretty much 100%. Because he can just go, no, you're going to pay me.
Well, it's because a lot of times they put that player option where it is because they don't really expect you to ever get to it. It's the same reason like we were saying about Fernando Tatis, that he's going to make a lot of money on the back end, but he's got to get to the back end in order for that money to pay out. So I understand that. I think this is a great move because now Weaver can literally say, everything you see before you is me. Before, you kind of had to judge him on Derrick Rose and Blake Griffin when he had nothing to do with that. He genuinely did. There's a reason he never tried to sign either of those guys in Oklahoma City. He didn't want them. I liked Derrick Rose. I was very outspoken that I was a Rose fan. If they were going to keep anyone, he was the guy for me because we had a lot of young guards coming in. So that one kind of shook me, but Blake makes sense. Blake wasn't playing well. Before I get to the question that this whole topic, we haven't even gotten to the question yet on this topic. I do want to ask you guys, there have been a lot of rumors about this. And again, they're just rumors until proven otherwise, that Jeremy Grant is being very sought after by the Boston Celtics right now. So I want to ask you guys, this might actually be the first test of Troy Weaver, because this is a guy he actually brought in to have here. Will it speak one way or the other to you, Jay, if Troy Weaver deals Jeremy Grant after he's having what a lot of people thought was an all-star season? He's leading the team in points, and he really has emerged since coming over from Denver.
I mean, I think you've got it right that it's a test. That's going to be whether we're going to go up or down a little bit more, again, on the graph, like trying to understand that. The return had to be sweet as hell. I mean, these aren't old veteran dudes. This is a guy who got another chance in a new town. So I don't know enough of Troy Weaver's past to kind of figure out which way he might lean. But if he keeps him, that's the attitude of this team going forward, which is nice to think about.
That what we have is what we want.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that. I like that. Well, I do. Russ?
I think him trading Jeremy Grant would be like the kind of stone cold trading we saw from like Kevin Costner in Draft Day. We're like, that's what it seems like. Like, I got this thing and I'm going to pump it up and I'm going to show it off. and then you go, all right, stock's high, sell high, buy low. But at the same time, these are humans. And Jeremy Grant came to Detroit partially because of Weaver and because of the opportunity. Yes. And it sends a – especially now where players are more empowered to go wherever they want in free agency, you don't want that black mark of, oh, you paid that guy big and you got rid of him like 6 months later. That's what happened to Blake Griffin in L.A., and he still has bad blood for the Clippers organization, even though that ownership and front office has completely changed. That's what you're doing, mm-hmm. and to put a black mark on your record for in potential free agents this early in your career,
But see, I like the interest and I like the position because this puts Troy Weaver in an absolutely no-lose situation. We don't have to get rid of Grant if we don't want to. Yeah. There's no rush to get rid of him. He's the best player on our team right now. So really, all you're doing is saying, okay, you're interested. This is the benchmark. You better be over it, or I'm just going to tell you I'll talk to you next offseason. Because there's no incentive to get rid of him. It's not breaking us in any way. He's a bright spot on the team. It looks like a great signing right now, and it really does. A lot of what Weaver's done this season looks like a really solid move. So there's really no incentive to push him out the door unless we don't know something and he does want to be out the door. But at the same time, if you're Jeremy Grant, this is kind of a sell high moment of people are looking at me. Maybe I do want to get on a contender. And if so, we'll trade you, but we're going to ask a lot for you, a lot for you. Go ahead, Jay.
I've got a question for you now, Eric. Kind of to recap the two segments we just did. With Galladay gone, Griffin and Rose gone, in the state of Michigan sports as a whole right now, do you hate DeKaiser more than you like any other athlete? Like, is your hate for him so high that it's not even higher than the next athlete you love? Because you've been high on these guys we just talked about, and they're gone.
Yeah.
Who do you love that you love more than you hate DeKaiser?
Well, I can tell you right now, we'll never have Danny DeKaiser on the show, even if we could get him, just because I hate him so much. I don't want him. I just don't like him. Yes, I would say my hate for DeKaiser outweighs. I mean, there are a lot of guys. Like I said, Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey. I'm a huge fan of these guys. I really like them, and I'm excited to watch them play. You go over to the Red Wings. I'm still a Larkin fan. I still see a lot. I'm excited to see some of these young guys play, like Sider. And I'm still shooting myself in the foot for taking Zadina off my fantasy team. I really am. The thing for me, Jay, is all the guys I'm looking forward to are either not here yet or on a team, but they're not here yet or they just got here. So it's tough to say I love them more than I hate Danny DeKaiser, because I hate Danny DeKaiser.
But for a moment in time, right now, that guy's your number one. You have to live with that.
Yeah, but all right, Russ, let me try to explain this to you in a way. If you were sitting in that front office right now, and your eyes are me, you're coming in, you're analyzing that team. You're telling me that you're sitting there going, Danny DeKaiser, I like him being here.
I got to get myself in the Eisenman mood. Just doing some yoga during the Zoom call. Just give me a second. I don't mind it because, hey, this team's bad no matter what. And they're giving minutes to Mark Stahl, who is worse potentially here. I don't hate having him here. I think he's okay. When he was healthy, I think he could have been a solid second pairing defenseman. He was pushed into top pairing role. So it didn't look as good as it should have. But dude's kind of broken. His body has not recovered, and he might be done soon.
Thank God. That's what happens when you get stuck on a pairing with Jonathan Erickson for too damn long.
What carrying that piano does to your back.
And but that's what I'm trying to say is, like, DeKaiser – Stahl and them, they're fairly new. DeKaiser's been here for a while, and somehow he just keeps being here. Contact. Like, at this point, I'm Jack. At this point, I'm Jack. Give me the magic beans for the beanstalk. I'll give you Danny DeKaiser. I've reached that
point. Your question was answered. Danny DeKaiser is Eric's number one. Got it.
Yep. Hate that guy with a blinding passion.
But you love him. You love him, too.
I love how much I hate him. Yeah, I'm very, very fond of the hatred I have.
And what is hate? It's not love enduring.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That was deep.
Circling back, though, because we got way off topic. Blake Griffin, we mentioned how he's gone. And I just want to ask you guys, like, obviously that West Coast, the Western Conference, stacked with talented teams. I mean, Russ and I know we're staring straight down the barrel at Portland right now, hoping we can have a repeat because I want to see more Dame time. I really enjoy that. You got the Lakers, you got the Clippers, you got Denver. But when you look at this Eastern Conference, I mean, does Blake Griffin and the potential Andre Drummond, Russ, going to this team on top of Kyrie, on top of KD, you add in James Harden. So the offense is there, and then you got two guys that can play defense. Does this automatically make them the Eastern Conference favorite?
Completely irrelevant to Blake Griffin. Yes, it does. I think he could be a useful depth piece, right? His shooting has fallen off a cliff, especially his shooting from distance. And his defense, it remains slightly above average, not what it used to be. And maybe not having to be the focal point, you know, and playing 20 minutes a night, maybe that helps a lot. And never seeing another double team. But where he can provide a lot of help is in his passing. He has continued to be a strong playmaker, even with the Pistons. Last year, he led the Pistons in assists far too many games, frankly, for what you should expect out of his position. But when you have Harden, you have Kyrie, you have Durant, who can all spot up shoot, awesome. I mean, that is a recipe for success because you'll double team one, you'll kick down to Griffin, and then he'll find somebody that can drain that three. And it opens up a whole new avenue for their second unit to just completely move. And yeah, no, they're easily the favorite. I mean, who else are we talking about? The Bucks, who bungled a trade. Otherwise, hey, maybe they might actually have some depth. Or Philly, perennial playoff disappointment, brings in Doc Rivers, the only coach to lose three different series after being up 3-1. Yes, that's going to fix it.
I mean, but Embiid's the front runner for MVP right now. Good. So I mean, that's a helpful thing to have. He's very good. I still like Boston. They have pieces there that they could get there. That's the thing, though. The East is a total toss-up in compared to the West. Mm-hmm. So, Jay, you see this? And that's the thing. We can put a couple guys in front of you that we know. You've seen KD. You've seen Harden. Obviously, you've seen Blake and Drummond here over the years. I forgot to mention when I was setting it up for us. You bring in the fact that it reunites Blake with DeAndre Jordan from Lob City when they were in the Clippers together. So when you look at that, there's all this talent there. They still can't play defense for shit. They're still going to give up more points than anybody in NBA history, but they can score. And now you have legitimate three big men who, if Blake realizes, hey, I'm a power forward in this league, not a shooting guard, they have a real strong shot of being the Eastern Conference favorites, I think.
So to quote Russ and I's favorite show and to slightly adjust it, more all-star hands equals less work. And that's what Griffin's walking into. I put money on the Brooklyn Nets as soon as that happened because I'm a degenerate gambler on small transactions. Yes, but I did put money on that, and there's a big return on that. I think they are the favorite coming out of the East. And I put my money where my mouth's at. So
forecheck, back check, bet my paycheck. There you go.
Exactly. That's my motto. Mark.
You guys need help. All right, moving on. We're going to stay with the Pistons in an interesting way. If you've listened to this show over the last couple of years, you'll know that over the last decade, Russ and I have been friends since we were freshmen in high school, and probably since we were freshmen in high school, so over a decade, we have had the debate of, is Ben Wallace a Hall of Famer? Russ does not believe he is. I believe he is. I think this has legitimately become the longest-running argument in sports history, outside of LeBron or Michael Jordan. It's another year. He's a Hall of Fame finalist. I'm going to forget some names here. I know Hardaway's in there. The Bostrich is in there, Chris Bosh. Chris Webber is up for it. A couple guys that played a little bit before our time. Cooper, who played on the Lakers with Magic in them. So there's some names. Ben has to get past some names that make it tough. So I thought we're going to do this a different way. I think I've found a way to prove it. But I'm going to, Russ, I'm going to tell you right now, I know you have every number under the sun in front of you. So you are not allowed to say anything for the next two minutes, because I am going to present Jay with just the stats for two people. One of these people is Ben Wallace. The other one is a definitive, undisputed Hall of Famer. And I'm going to give you the numbers, Jay, and I'm going to ask you to tell me which one of them is the Hall of Famer.
Can I give out my credentials before becoming this person?
No, that's why I'm doing this, because the reason I'm doing this is because, like I said, I know Russ has all these numbers, and I can tell you right now, two of them are dead giveaways to which one's Ben Wallace. So that's why I'm asking you. I'm asking you as someone who's a sports fan, but I'm going to present you with the numbers, and I want you to tell me. So here is player one. Okay, player one. 6,683 points. True shooting percentage of 54.6%. 11,954 rebounds. 531 blocks. Efficiency rating of 14.6%. I'm going to skip the next one because it's the dead giveaway.
His name.
All-star nods, two. And defensive player of the year, two. Okay? The other side. Points. He is 400 points less at 6,254. True shooting percentage of 47.4. 10,482 rebounds. 2,137 blocks, so he's got 1,600 more blocks than the other guy. 15.5% efficiency rating. All-star nods, four. And defensive player of the year trophies, four. Was player one the Hall of Famer, or was player two the Hall of Famer?
Okay, so I'm guessing the person who's already been inducted into the Hall.
One of these guys is in the Hall of Fame. Russ, do you already know who it is?
All right, okay. And then the other one is obviously Ben Wallace, who has been nominated to go in.
Who's up for the Hall.
I'm going to guess that player two with the more blocks is Ben, so player one has already been in the Hall.
Very good. Player one is Dennis Rodman, and the giveaway is the fact that Dennis Rodman has five NBA championships to Ben Wallace's one. But obviously, Rodman played on the Bad Boys for 2 years, and then he won three with the Bulls. So that's my reasoning, though, of the fact that you look at it, Dennis Rodman and Ben Wallace have eerily, and other than the championships, Russ, which we can take and we can separate for the fact of you got to look where Dennis Rodman played and who he played with, and then, you know, obviously the Pistons, the going to work Pistons. Everything else, pretty freaking close, and you add twice as many Defensive Player of the Year's awards when we're talking about Dennis Rodman being arguably the greatest defensive player of all time.
I actually had this comp up. That's why I knew it. As soon as you gave points, there we go. I went, wait a minute, I just saw that number.
Well, and that's actually why I said you weren't allowed to talk, because I knew the second I gave you the first number, you were going to
It's the right comparison to make for Ben Wallace, if you're making the case for why he needs to be in there. However, it also works against you, because all I need for Ben Wallace to be in the Hall of Fame, the only thing I need for him to be in the Hall of Fame, is to be almost average offensively. That's it. Just almost. And that's exactly what Dennis Rodman was. You look at offensive box score plus minus, just per 100 possessions, how much compared to a league average player do you influence your team? I'm looking for a zero, just a zero to tell me you're league average offensive. Ben Wallace, all but 4 years in his career, was a negative. For his career, he's a negative. Rodman, 0.3 for his career. So he just was slightly above. Was Ben Wallace the better defensive player? Maybe, probably. He certainly got more hard work. Can put them in the same category, and it's why both of them made their case. I don't care about championships for this. It's individual accolades. Michael Jordan won those championships. Dennis Rodman helped. But he has to be the best defender in there just to get in the conversation, because he would be the worst shooter in the Hall of Fame. And that's not hyperbole. He would have the worst points per game. He would have the worst free throw percentage out of anyone in the Hall. Out of anyone that's played at least 1,000 games, he has the third worst points per game. He has the second worst points per game, third worst overall points. And he played almost 9 minutes more than the next closest guys. He's just an absolute vacuum offensively. Is he great defensively? Fantastic defensively. And that's why I have time for specialists, but I'm a small hall. I'm a small hall guy. And now we can check our bingo board.
You are.
I've said I'm a small hall guy. You've brought up Ben Wallace. So we're almost to a bingo already. That's what I'm stuck at. No, I don't need him to be a 20-point player. I need him to be average. Just not be a negative on the offensive side.
Yeah. I think you make a very good point, and I do. And I just look, like I said, Dennis Rodman is, just for quick eyeing it, Dennis Rodman is 400 points ahead of Ben Wallace. Dennis Rodman played two fewer seasons. I just looked to confirm that. I wanted to check. Because if they played the same amount of seasons, then you're talking about like half a point a game or something like that is where we're at. But I also have to say him having an offensive favor, you got to look at who they were playing with. If you're Dennis Rodman, nobody should be guarding you on offense anyway. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Steve Kerr, who has the highest three-point percentage in NBA history, still has it. Like, at the end of the day, dude's got it. So you have one of the greatest offensive players of all time, and Scottie Pippen, who's one of the top 50 all time, one of the better players of his era. I'll give him that credit. I'm not ready to put him as one of the top of all time eras, but one of the greatest of his era. One, if not both of those guys, have to be demanding at least two defenders. So if you're Dennis Rodman, you're just open. You should be open. You're not getting the ball, but you're open. Whereas you look at the Pistons, yes, Chauncey and Rip were the scorers of those teams. They were. But neither of them demanded that you make sure two guys are on them at all times. So in reality, they were playing one-on-one straight up in every scenario. So I think that takes a little away from Ben, whereas if you have Rip, replace Rip with Kobe, Ben Wallace is open for the ball every single time. I'm just giving you a comparison of the level of talent. So Ben Wallace's offense to me means nothing, because Ben Wallace could have averaged 0.00 points a game in his career. I think he still contributes so much on the other side of the ball that it's undisputed how good he is. The guy was undersized for his position, an undrafted free agent, and is going to go down, if not a Hall of Famer, is going to go down as probably one of the best defenders of the 2000s.
Easily. He's absolutely, I'd say, the best defender of the 2000s. 100%.
It's very fair.
The problem is he did it for 5 years and that's it. And he had a 16-year season, or 16-year career. And he did it for 5 years. Maybe six, if you want to stretch that out a little bit. But it was like his age 27 to 31 seasons. He was dominant. So if you judge Hall of Fame by peak, your argument gets better. Absolutely. I tend to more look at the career and look that, like, hey, before that, he was garbage. And after that, he fell off a cliff, frankly, after 2 years.
He found the right – I agree with you. He found the right situation. I will never argue that he didn't find the right situation.
To the offense point, him being open all day, you can't be more open than a free throw. And he shot 41%.
All right, you want to have that argument, that's fine. But let me remind you that Shaquille O'Neal is in the Hall of Fame, and that guy has the worst
Ben's
free throw
worse.
Percentage.
Ben is worse from the stripe.
But I'm giving you the point that the stripe should mean next to nothing, because we have centers that are in the Hall of Fame that were god-awful at free throws. And like Shaq, there is video of Shaq in warm-ups draining threes left and right. This is Shaq. The guy can reach his arm out and touch the hoop from the three-point line, but he couldn't make a charity stripe shot. So I get that. But at the same time, I think we're also taking it out of context of there are guys who were just better at certain things. You want to go to the other side, Ray Allen, Reggie Miller. Those guys are never going to go down as lockdown defenders. They're going in the Hall of Fame because they could make a three-pointer like it was a layup. So when you're looking in the Hall of Fame, and you're giving these guys, like, you're analyzing these guys, yes, basketball should be taken as a complete game. But at the end of the day, Tom Brady's not going to go in the Hall of Fame because he could catch a football. Because he can't catch a football. He could throw one. So it's that same thing. Jordan, like, we are very, very few guys in that Hall of Fame that you can honestly say got into the Hall of Fame because of everything they did on a basketball court. A lot of these guys are in the Hall of Fame because they did one thing exceptionally better than everybody else. And Ben Wallace, in that regards, was exceptionally better at playing defense than everybody else on the floor.
Let's call him an 11 out of 10, right? Offensively, he was a 1 out of 10.
Okay.
Does a 6 – yeah, does a 6 out of 10 –
he averages up. Hey, it got me to graduate high school, so if we're –
And that's why I'm a small guy, because I don't – I think the bar should be higher.
Okay, and that's great.
A 9 out of 10.
Gentlemen, real quickly.
What I was just about to, bring Jay in. I was going to say, we've laid everything out for Jay. It's time to hear what Justin Marcus has to say.
I have absolutely nothing of value to add to this argument, and I'm enjoying it. But what I'm going to say is I feel like I'm watching a soon to be couple getting married, arguing where they're going to put someone at a table. And if they're even coming to the wedding, and they're ultimately just going to be at that like one table where it's just a hodgepodge group of people, and you guys just settle on something. So I'm very interested in where this is going.
No, but Jay, you said you have nothing to add of value, but you've literally just like you're a sports guy. You understand what's necessary to be in the Hall of Fame. You understand all that. So I'm asking you, from what we've presented, we've just given you both sides of this argument. I'm not saying you're the tiebreaker, because Russ and I will never be able to tie on this argument. It's just always going to be one thinks one thinks the other. But where do you fall?
Russ and I have both talked about less is more. And like, I feel like if you go to every Hall of Fame, like Russ saying small hall, if you go to every Hall of Fame, you should cut off the 10% of the bottom. Like, it should be a rotating list of whoever was the worst is out. I don't like a little bit of people coming in just to say that they're in. And if Russ is pulling out these numbers that he was below average offensively, that's not famous. And if you're supposed to be a Hall of Famous, you can't be below average at something. So I would be out on Ben Wallace going to the Hall of Fame.
For the record, I hate this argument because I want Ben Wallace in the Hall of Fame. I would be ecstatic I want him in. I don't think he should be, but I'd like it.
Exactly. No, I want to put that out there. Like, Russ has never come forward and saying that this is not something he doesn't want. He's doing exactly what he's got to do. He's thinking logically and giving you a fair argument. And I can't take anything away from that, because with every time we have this argument, I gain more and more realization that yes, it's a long shot for him to be there. But at the end of the day, Russ and I, that's one thing Russ and I have never been able to meet in the middle on. Russ is a numbers guy. He watches them play 100%, and he sees the eye test to an extent, but Russ is a numbers guy. I, on the other hand, I am the person who the numbers could mean nothing to me. Like I said, Ben Wallace could average 0.00 points a game in his NBA career. At the end of the day, I watched those games and I saw the little things that don't go into a box score or a statistic breakdown at the end of the day that showed me, yeah, this guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And we deserve to have someone from the Going to Work Pistons in the Hall of Fame. And at the end of the day, Rip and Chauncey are probably the more likely options just from their statistical sides. But Ben is the guy that did it. You take I've said this a bunch of times. If you look at those Going to Work Pistons, if you take anyone out, you can take anyone out and replace them with someone else, and I think a title is still there. I don't think you can take Ben Wallace out and the title is still there. For the fact of what Ben Wallace had to do. Ben Wallace had to go into the playoffs and he had to stop Shaquille O'Neal, the unstoppable guy who was going for 4 straight titles. And Ben Wallace did it. He stopped him. And then he did it again in 2006 when Shaq was in, or not 2006, but in the early 2000s when Shaq was in Miami. Ben Wallace had to guard the heart, the best center in the league for all that time.
Well, and if I'm building a team, especially today, where his size would make him very switchable on defense, I want a Ben Wallace. I'm not going to play him 37 minutes a night like he did in 2004. but I want Wallace. But just because I want a guy and he helps you win and he helps you win a championship, I don't think that's the qualifier for the Hall of Fame on its own.
Okay. So at the end of the day, we got right back to where I knew we were going to get. Russ and I will never agree on this. And guess what? We'll be having this conversation March 11th of 2020.
Hopefully in 5 days.
Oh no, I hope not. I hope it happens. Yeah, I hope it. And but honestly, looking at that class, I think Ben Wallace, this is the class Ben Wallace could sneak in. Chris Webber is going to get in the Hall of Fame. Bosch, probably going to get in the Hall of Fame. I can't say no. But everybody else, Hardaway was great in his time. I still think Ben Wallace had a bigger impact than when he did it. Cooper, there's a reason Cooper isn't in the Hall of Fame yet, because he played with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He played with two of the best ever to do it. So he's in there because he played on those teams, but it's going to be tough. So if Ben Wallace was going to get in, this was the year Ben Wallace was going to get in.
No.
Ben Wallace didn't have a fighting chance last year when it was Tim Duncan, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant. Like, there were too many big names to jump over. I hope it does happen. And I hope next year we're hearing about Chauncey Billups being a finalist, because then we can start the argument all over again.
So Ben's maybe making the wedding, maybe making the table that he'll be
Listen,
at.
Listen, if I'm having a wedding and he's a maybe, he's coming to the wedding.
Yeah, I think Ben Wallace is that guy you sit next to the DJ. Yeah, he's the one that's sitting right next to the DJ, right next to the speaker. At the end of the day, I hope he gets in. But yeah, I agree with Russ. It's a long shot, and there's a lot to put in front of it. But I think what he did in that time in Detroit is enough to say, yeah, this guy needs to be in there. He does. So again, we'll see what comes along with it. Moving on, I'm going to talk football for a few minutes. I have to look up the numbers so I don't get it 100% wrong. Cowboys, I just exited out of the one thing I needed.
Damn it, Hans,
don't you love when that happens? Don't you love when that happens? Here we go. It's coming back very quickly. I can give you the bullet point. Dak Prescott, QB for the Dallas Cowboys, signed a extension the other day. Here we are. Signs a 4-year contract extension worth $160 million with $126 guaranteed. Deal includes a $66 million signing bonus, highest in NFL history. Before we go anywhere else, I'm going to ask the commissioner to break down that last thing I said. Dak Prescott, let me say that one more time for you, Jay, so I know you heard me. Dak Prescott just got the highest signing bonus in NFL history. I don't have the button with me. I'll add it in later. Ladies and gentlemen, 60 seconds of salt with Justin Marcus.
Oh, God. Now. I'm not salty about that in the least. I'm okay with that. Listen, this is part PR, part deserved. Him getting the guaranteed and everything in his contract, the dude balled for Dallas and he got hurt. They mm-hmm. needed to give him the special client treatment to make it look good on him coming back to the team. I'm okay with Dak for a couple of reasons. Also the fact that his age and the term, and when that term's going to be done, he's going to be 31. You got a nice, cute little window to win with Dak. I'm okay with everything about the signing. I got no problem with it. I'm more concerned what happens to other guys in the league looking for jobs at that position too. But for Dak coming back, give him his money. Pay that man.
All right, so let me just want to put this out for you, Jay, because while I understand him getting the money and you knew he was going to get paid, whether it was with Dallas, whether it was a sign-in trade where they were going to get him to the money and then they were going to trade him off, because we're going to talk about a couple other quarterbacks here, or whether it was just moving on and finding his way somewhere else. Dak Prescott came into the league in 2016. Other than this past year, Dak Prescott has started and played in every game. So he's gone in his NFL career. He's played. Oh God, someone's gonna laugh. He's played 69
nice.
games.
That's a nice amount.
There you go. He has a record of 42-27, 1,500 completions on just shy of 2,300 attempts for a 66% completion percentage, for 17,634 yards. 106 touchdowns to 40 interceptions, QB rating of 97.3. So where I like what you're talking about, Jay, I do. If you're telling me that someone's going to get $160 million and basically all but $34 million of that is going to be guaranteed, and you're going to give this guy the largest signing bonus the NFL has ever seen, my only issues with that is the dude better have freaking rings on his fingers already. How the hell can you validate a guy who has been decent but has never even seen a Super Bowl, has never even come sniffingly close, and plays in what last year was the worst freaking division in NFL history? And then at the end of it, you're going to be Jerry Jones, who needs to be in a straight jacket anyway, Russ. And you're going to say, hey, by the way, Dak, we know you haven't walked in 6 months, but here's $126 million. And by the way, here's another 66 just in case you weren't feeling
logical. Well, I didn't say it was logical. I just said I liked it.
I'll try and plus some logic then. To bring it back into somewhere near the realm of sanity. Jerry Jones has been very adamant that he did not want to pay Dak Prescott for 4 years. Oh, and now he hands him out the biggest signing bonus. By the way, Matt Ryan's signing bonus was only $500,000 less than that. Wrap your mind around that one.
I understand.
What changed?
Yeah. So you're saying he's going to go downhill after getting that signing bonus like Matt Ryan. Because
the defense can't protect him. That's actually...
To the Jalen Hurts Eagles.
So what changed? there's rumors that there's a new TV deal coming, and who would know best? An owner of an NFL franchise. There's something coming. I mean, if you just, first off, whoever in the NFL has the highest guaranteed signing bonus, that just means that's the quarterback who most recently put ink to paper. That's it. I mean, you look at the top five, it's Mahomes.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. In practical guarantees. Mahomes, then Dak, Deshaun Watson, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz. Those last two just got traded for peanuts because we give quarterbacks lots of money for just being there, mostly for being an NFL competent quarterback. So it was always going to be a lot, but I think this TV contract coming up is what finally made Jerry go, you know what? That's fine. This $40 million in 3 years, it's going to be peanuts. We're going to see our $50 million a year quarterback. We're going to see our $55-60 million a year quarterback sooner rather than later. I don't know. Screw you, Fox Sports Detroit, but it's the other streaming services that are just going to be raking the money towards the NFL here to pay for these crazy salaries. I think it's a sign of things to come.
Yeah. All right. So since the Deshaun Watson extravaganza started, we have seen a couple things happen. We have seen Matt Stafford traded to the Rams for Jared Goff, and a very, very, as a Lions fan, a very lovely return. We have seen Carson Wentz, a guy who was supposed to be heir apparent in that division as the new guy who has had a lot of injury problems, get traded to Indy for, well, he just got traded to Indy. I'm not even going to tell you about the crap they got in return. We have seen Russell Wilson, I've gone on record many times as saying is the best quarterback in the NFL, and I will stand by that. Anybody wants to have that conversation, I'll be happy to have it with you. We have seen him not say he wants a trade, but he wants a trade. When you give out a list of teams you'll go play for, you want a trade. One of those being the Cowboys, and oh, by the way, now Dak gets all this money. So, Russ, when you look at this from an outsider looking in, because we don't really have a vested interest in Houston, you and I are both Deshaun Watson fans. What is this doing for Deshaun Watson's ability to kind of push for what he wants, or the Texans kind of waited around? What's this doing for them? Where if there's not a perfect market now laid out for what Deshaun Watson's worth in the NFL, I don't know what
Deshaun Watson's favor. Right now, he's making about $39 million a year.
Okay.
So now he gets to look at Dak and go, Dak got 40. I'm a bargain. You seeing this? Or he can wait the 2 years until his contract's up and realize, Dak got 40. I'm going to get 50. Give me that money. It plays directly into his hands. And there should be more suitors now that look at it and go, yep, that's the market. Okay. You look good. I give up. I will, in fact, pay for it.
But I guess to turn it and ask, I see exactly what you're saying. Like, Deshaun at 39 is a bargain over Dak at 40. I get that. It's only $1 million, but it's still a very, very nice million. I get you. Yeah, absolutely. But I guess it works for Deshaun. But now you have to look at Houston, who said, we're not trading him, we're not trading him, we're not trading him, we're not trading him. He's not going to play, so we're going to just pay him $39 million to, you know, keep his shoes clean. But what I'm saying is now you're Houston going, okay, no, we have to trade him. Well, Matt Stafford got a lot. Carson Wentz got next to nothing. One of those guys has gotten a team to a Super Bowl. So you have to think it's kind of altered the state of what he's worth. If the guy who everybody said isn't worth anything, like the Lions need to part ways with him because he's not, you know, he can't do anything for them. And somehow in return, we get lots of first round picks and a quarterback, while the guy who's been to a Super Bowl and was supposed to be the next big quarterback in the NFL goes to the Colts for magic beans. I think
one gets confounded a little bit. Some assets had to get tacked on just to take Goff too. So it wouldn't have been as much, I think, if it was just Stafford straight up. But yeah, absolutely. Looking at Carson Wentz, more as a cautionary tale that, hey, he looked like he was going to set the world on fire, and then he got hurt and it completely fell off, and now you can't get anything for him, and he's still the fifth most guaranteed money in the entire league. So, yeah, I know. I see the risk there and why some teams might go, hey, you know, maybe not, but I'm still all in.
I get where I made my error there. What I meant to say when I said that was Stafford goes to LA, but at the same time, Jared Goff, who went in the same draft, comes back with first round picks attached to him. So it's just that thing of it makes it tough. But Jay, when you look at this right now, obviously Watson's sitting pretty because he's got nothing to lose. You don't want to trade me, that's fine. I'll watch my backup do really well while I sit here and collect 39. All right, let's be honest, 37 million, because after you fine me for the entire season, I'm probably going to have to fork over a couple million. But you look at this, and now guys like Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson, who should be two guys that every team, and I'm going to say this, all 31 other teams, regardless of who you have in there, should be salivating right now at the opportunity of getting their hands on these guys. But you don't hear a lot of pushback. You're not hearing a lot of gimme, gimme, gimme. You're more seeing a lot of these teams just kind of sit and wait. I mean, is there a reasoning behind that?
I think
that's
all just negotiation tactics. I mean, teams, of course, they would kill to have him, but will they actually kill? No. The Texans saying, like, hey, guess what? We're not doing it. It's just all a ploy. Like, I think at the end of the day, between the two that we're talking about, Wilson's probably going to sit still. And the more quarterbacks that find their homes, the more of a position of, hey, we need anything we can get, the Seahawks and the Texans have to basically keep to themselves and pretend like they're not going to get rid of their assets. They're going to be whittled down to a confined amount of teams to trade with, right? I don't see them going anywhere. I see what you just played out, Deshaun sitting and getting fined. I see Russell staying. More quarterbacks off the board. The market, though it's becoming more realized, the landing spots also get smaller. So I think the inventory is going to get real low real quick on where these quarterbacks can go.
Oh, and I agree. I think Russell stays. Him and DK set Russell up for being a contender for MVP again just because of the numbers he puts up. The team maybe not so much, but the numbers he puts up keep in the front run. But, Jay, you actually hit on a point I was going to make to sum this up. 3 months ago, it was wide open. You didn't know what was going to happen. But like you just said, landing spots are disappearing quick and fast. Teams are settling on who they want. They're kind of accepting who they're going to get. You have Miami was a front run. Miami seems very confident with Tua as their guy. Chicago, I don't think Chicago could come up with enough inventory to get a hold of either of these guys personally, because right now Trubisky and Foles are both just not goods you want to touch. And let's be honest, Russ, I think Vegas gave up a lot when they got rid of Vegas kind of had a lot when they got rid of Mac, and they just seem to have expended it along the way to the point that I don't think Derek Carr gets you Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson at this point. And that's their biggest trading chip right now.
I'm
is
not
a quarterback
lie to you.
Who is playing
decent. When you said Vegas, I thought, what did the Golden Knights give up? They have a power play quarterback. What? That took a minute, but you make a very good point that the amount of teams that could actually give up something that would be even close to equal in value. Very few and far between. And the ones that probably can, the draft picks look worse now once they have that player. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I kind of look at Vegas because you can give Derek Carr back, and that's not even close, right? You still got a lot of ground to make up, but it's something more than draft picks that you can give up. That if Seattle wants to, you know, retool on the fly,
yeah,
Derek Carr maybe lets him do that. You know, same with Houston, although Houston should just burn all of it to the ground. That team is so bad. It's so poorly constructed, and no draft picks.
And they don't really have anything to say, okay, this is what we're building around. JJ's gone, DeAndre's gone, you've gotten rid of linemen, your quarterback doesn't want to be there anymore. You are legitimately, you're the Houston Texans from 20 years ago when they were an expansion team. Like, you have nothing to build off of. And yeah, you can give Derek Carr back, that's fantastic, but at the end of the day, you're still setting this up where you have to give up so much that these two quarterbacks are not going anywhere of an improvement. Seattle's at least a playoff contending team every time they touch the field for Russell. So for Russell to go anywhere else, there's just so much they have to get rid of that it resets
the
team.
And I think to that point, my biggest thing for Wilson is that he's almost as old as when Dak's term will be up with Dallas. Russell Wilson is damn near 30 years old. And if he's going to go on a team that's going to give up arms and limbs and legs just to get him, is he going to win with them? He's got a better chance probably winning with Seattle than anywhere else that's left on the board. Like, he's got to sit still. And he's old in quarterback years.
Buddy, I'd like to – I don't want to hurt your feelings or anything. Russell Wilson is –
He's 32
years old. Yeah, he's legitimately 13 days younger than me.
You're old, though. Jesus, Eric.
So you're saying I
– Don't go anywhere, Eric. You're old.
You're saying I could still demand some value in the NFL. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Moving on. This is a little fun. It's a weird thing because usually we save these kind of things until there's just nothing else to talk about in sports. But this one came across, and the second I saw it, I'm like, no, we have to put this in. So we're throwing in a best of topic. It's a little bit of fun. Justin has 17 of these, and I'm sure it's gone up since the last time we've talked. So Russ and I are going to go first here. What it is best signature moves, best things these people are going to be forever known for in sports. And I'm really interested to hear what Russ has to say here. So I'll let you lead off this, Rusty.
So
best signature things in sports.
And it's the Pavel Datsyuk deke. The deke, right? The one-legged switch to your back end on the way and just, if the goalie's coming with you, you just flip it over his head. And no one else could do it as smooth. And I've seen many a guys go headfirst into the boards in beer leagues trying to do it, which only adds more fun to it. I mean, it is absolute signature. You can't have – similar to how Forsberg had that one deke, who he did steal from someone else, but he made famous with the one-handed kind of reach. No one can do that deke without every single broadcast team going, the Datsyuk deke, right? That – you hear guys, coming up now going, I watched Datsyuk. I modeled my game after that. Like, that's something special. And that, I have to say first.
Well, and I don't think anybody will ever forget what I believe it was San Jose where he put the guy it's a weird thing to say. He put the guy on skates pretty much. Like, he had the guy just unable. Was it Couture? Yep. Is that who he did that to? That's what I thought it was too. Good I wasn't reach. Sure. So, yeah. Absolutely great. I like that one, Russ. I do. I'm going to throw one back at you real quick because when I put this list together, there were a couple I thought Russ and I would line up on, but Russ and I have talked about this guy so much over the years that I can't see Russ not having him on the list. But if he doesn't, I'm giving him one to have because I think every single kid in the late 90s at least tried to do this. And that's the Ken Griffey waggle before you hit the baseball. Just moving that bat like crazy, ready to go. So for me, the signature move will always be the Ken Griffey waggle. I did everything to mock my game after that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, his went 400 feet. Mine went about 400 inches.
What's more iconic, the bat wag or the backwards hat?
Oh, I mean, it's the backwards hat. Fair. It always will be. But I'm just saying, if we're talking about signature moves, I can't tell you how many times in my yard at Cortland Street in Farmington, in the side yard, I would turn my hat backwards and just start waggling back and forth with that bat, ready to hit it. Now, granted, it was a giant plastic bat and it was a wiffle ball coming at me, but everybody wanted to be Ken Griffey Jr. and have that ability to hit a baseball.
Dude was the epitome of cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's one that if you did that, I don't know, did you have it on the list?
Baseball player, actually. Who I'll go next. And it's
okay.
It's his batting stance.
I have one as well.
Just a little one armed, hold it out like a bow and tuck that sleeve in. One Mr. Ichiro. The hit king of the world, the way that he would line up the coldest stare in all of baseball, the way he would line up his bat with the pitcher's head and just give it to you right before every at-bat. It was his so signature. And you, honestly, if I'm in Little League at the time, right, and someone does that to me, I'm throwing at his head. Because who do you think you are? But Ichiro could more than back it up against any single pitcher that he had ever faced, and it just cold. I absolutely loved it.
I'm throwing a rising fastball to your hip bone is what I'm doing. All right, so I had two other ones, but I'm going to narrow it down because these are, to me, they weren't great. One of them was great. They weren't great, but they were so hard to look away from. So I'm going to let Russ tell me which one was the better of the two. Gary Sheffield's spastic waggle, yep, just doesn't make sense. Or, because my hands are so fast, I don't even have to grip the bat normally. Kevin Youkilis. Kevin Youkilis, who would hold the bat with this hand and with his backhand, would stroke the handle of the bat before he hit it. Yep,
is the
I'm so quick. I'm going to get my Phil hands Kessel around in time.
That's what it is. Yeah, yes.
Context. Yes. Thank you.
Looking guy, where you go, no, you sell lumber. You're not a professional athlete. And then he comes out and absolutely produces offensively.
And then he comes out, and bats 260 and somehow finishes the season with like 85 RBIs, and you don't even know how he did it. So I get it. I do. My next one is for Jay, because I know Jay has this on the list, and I'm trying to help him dwindle it down. Jay, for you, and this is for me as well, I feel like you have to have the Tiger twirl. After he hits a great shot, twirling that club after a great shot.
You guys finally got one on my illustrious list, and that would be the Tiger twirl. Yes.
The Tiger twirl. The Tiger twirl is it's impossible to walk away from. And then I have a couple other ones, but the last one I want to get to before I want to let Jay and Russ rattle off is this one's probably the most iconic because it's widely considered the most unguardable shot in NBA history, and that's going to be the skyhook from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So I am 5'8" on a great day with my hair spiked up. I used to go in my driveway and try to do the skyhook. For those that don't know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is like 7'3". So for me, it made no sense. For him, it led to being the all-time leading scorer in the NBA. I'm so glad
that, because I had that on my list of somebody has to say this one. We can't go through this without saying it.
The skyhook.
Yeah. Well, real quick, I want to ask this though, Russ, because Jay's still coming into the game, so I want to give him time to learn, and I know Jay's going to Google both of these, but I want to ask you, because it is considered the most unguardable shot. What was more unguardable, though? Kareem's skyhook or Kobe's turnaround?
I'm going to go with the skyhook.
Yeah, see, it's hard.
Just because
it's
of
so
the pure
hard.
Geometry of it. Like, Kobe was lethal because Kobe was, I mean, not to be redundant, but he was lethal. He was quick and cold and calculated constantly. You didn't know when it was going to happen, but then it happened. The skyhook is just a geometric impossibility.
Yep.
He could tell you when he's going to do it. And you probably still can't. You don't have the physical length to take care of this maneuver. It was... fantastic, and
he Bryson DeChambeau back in the day.
So would you say Kobe was like a snake
Mamba?
Striking?
Ooh,
potentially. Yes, no,
like
the
Black Mamba.
Great,
sort
and we
of,
fail
yeah.
at nicknames every day in Ooh. Sports, and we don't have more people named as aptly as Kobe with Black Mamba.
as the Black Mamba. It was perfect. And I would agree with you. It just for the sheer nature of how, like, Yao Ming couldn't get to this shot if he knew it was coming. But yet every day, and it went in every time. It was just perfectly, because not only is he not shooting frontward like everyone else, he's coming around his body. So, yeah, just so great. Jay, I'll let you poke into your list now. I know I took the tiger twirl from you. I'm sorry, but
you did take the tiger twirl only for the fact that you don't need to actually twirl your club after you hit a ball. So it's completely unnecessary, but it's excellent.
It just shows you how much better he is, that he's celebrating his shot.
So mine comes from a position of flair and being duplicated by, like, the youths, if you will. So I got a couple ones. Some aren't specific to people. Some are just specific to moments. Sticking on golf, I think the cockiest thing that is a signature move that some golfers do is walking up to a hole before the putt is even sunk yet. That is aggressive. You don't move your feet when you hit a ball, Russ. When you putt, you wait and you see what happens. Dudes that are walking towards the cup, it means that it's going in. They're going to go scoop that motherfucker up. So I think that's signature. Whenever someone does that, it's very cocky.
Which, Jay, have you seen, because it's taken on a life of its own, in the President's Cup 2 years ago, Tiger made a putt to end it, and he kind of walked it in. But in over time, people who are very good at technology and have made it, there are now videos where you can see Tiger hit the putt, and he's walking in front of the ball, because they've edited it to the point that he's in front of the ball, and at one point it gets to the point where he's waiting for the ball to get into the cup.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It is great. But I agree with you. That is one that, like, unless you're like someone who like just knows it's going in because you're that good. Yeah, you don't need to be.
It's the equivalent of Batista and the bat flip. And that's also on my list. So.
Boy, that's on my list because it leads to the Batista getting punched in the
very,
face.
Very, very signature. Very iconic punch. I'm going to rattle off a couple of hockey ones because they're kind of self-explanatory, but they also made my list. We're going to go with the Jágr salute.
Let's hear it.
Taking the glove off and the salute. That's him. No one else gets to do that. If you do, you're doing a Jágr. Yes. Mullet has to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. That has been my guy's celebration for NHL games for the last 10 years since you could put in a custom
hitting on replication.
It's the best.
So there it is for you. The next one, we're going to take our hand off, but we're actually going to throw our glove up into the air and shoot it down like Teemu Selänne did. The duck hunt, Teemu Selänne, again, we're sticking with the theme of cockiness. That's cocky as shit. You're throwing equipment in the air and shooting it, which has no value to the game, but you're doing it. Last one on the ice. And this is more player specific as well. Honorable mention to Artemi Anisimov, I believe it was, for doing the sniper shot against, he was playing for the Rangers and he took a sniper shot at the goalie once, which started a fight because you can't do that after you score a goal. The knuckle puck. As a kid, you lined that puck up on its edge and you took a slap shot as hard as you could, even though the puck was plastic. It came from a movie, so it didn't technically happen in a sport. But everyone replicated the knuckle puck. And then if you do it on ice, like, you're thinking about it. So it's a stretch. I realize that. The last one. I got two. And this kind of plays for Eric real quick. When Ben Wallace would do something, wouldn't they play a gong every time he did something in the arena? I believe
he had his
own sound effect when he would do something.
Well, so did Rip, though. Whenever Rip made a basket, they would say, you know, another basket by Rip Hamilton, and then it would be Rip literally going, yes, sir.
Those are iconic personalities that I love in sports.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Last one. It's not for being in a moment where you did something good. It's for being in a moment where you sucked incredibly that it's iconic on its own, and it's a signature bad move. That would be one Patrick Waugh doing the Statue of Liberty. That moment, and it might just be local to us. It might just be in our world of sports signature moves. Dude thought he had it, and it was completely wrong. And you know how the play works out. The Statue of Liberty play is one of the funniest things that is so signature that he owns it for
a bad reason. Can we talk about the special hell that the Red Wings kept Patrick Waugh in? He gets chased out of Montreal and demands a trade because the Red Wings run up the score. right? He gets traded to Colorado. Oh, and then not only does he get beat, it just his absolute head kicked in by, what, two different goalies at least? He has a Statue of Liberty play. It is that is the crux of the rivalry, mm-hmm. is F. Patrick Waugh. And I love it. I absolutely love it, no matter where he is. He does.
And he deserves every second of it. Can I one more curveball if I can? It's not sports, but it gets replicated in movies a lot, and it's also signature. Now, I don't know the specific point in history on when this went down, but like Roman Colosseums, they would have a guy stand up on a podium and he'd put his thumb in the middle and he'd rather go up or down. Every movie does it. And it's like, you're dead or you're good. That's iconic.
It wouldn't be Justin without breaking the rules at least once.
It's fair. To finish it off for me, I have one, and then I want to ask you if you guys can guess what I think is the most overdone, finally reached a point where it's just now stupid to be stupid. But my last one of greatness, and I'm not breaking the rules. It's still sports, but it has nothing to do with the actual game. It is, for me, I loved watching it. I wish that they would show it more, but I don't know that they do it anymore. Last season, the Milwaukee Bucks, before every game, would do WWE wrestling in the hallway to warm themselves up. And Giannis would end every one of them with the Cobra, where he'd smack his hand until the Cobra was ready, and then he'd get the Lopez brothers. For me, one of the coolest things, because it's, you know what? It's a team that's so confident with themselves that they can have fun before the game, and they don't all need to be in their own heads.
It's similar to hockey players. Just, like, they'd warm each other up by smacking the crap out of each other in the hallway before they came out for warmies. So,
yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or like them playing soccer in the corridors, because it's something to get them. And then for me, this one shouldn't be a surprise, because if you followed sports over the last 20 years, everybody's seen it. I'm sure hundreds and hundreds of kids in gyms have done it because they want to be like this guy. For me, the most overdone, overplayed, and I'm ready for it to just go away, is the LeBron James throwing powder in the air before every.
I thought you were going to go with the gobble gobble. Everyone's doing like, feed me like I need dinner, but like they're fine.
Oh, okay. I see it. I see what you're saying. It's not a bad one. And then lastly for me, this one was a tradition that we don't see anymore. And I wish we would see more of it, because I really do think it died with – this guy didn't die. So, but it died when this guy decided to stop. And it's Barry Sanders. Every time he scored a touchdown, Barry Sanders would hand the ball to the ref. There was no celebration. There was no – anything. For all you know, Barry was handing him the ball and just telling you, see you in another 5 minutes. But that was something that I wish would come back to sports, because that's a tradition you don't see anymore. Everybody's got to show off that they scored. Well, guess what? That's your job. You're supposed to be in that end zone. Barry knew that, and he made sure that everybody realized, hey, I've done this before. I'm going to do it again.
My last one actually goes in the complete opposite direction. Not in celebrating necessarily, but where is Barry?
Fair enough, it's fine.
Incredibly subdued and efficient with his actions. Dominic Kashuk was not. Dominic Kashuk was chaos turned into a science, the way he would flail around. And it's specifically the Kashuk flail roll, where he goes from on one side, right, and rolls over on his head to the other side. He actually, what's eerie is if you watch it, they're almost identical every single time. He knows exactly what he's doing, but it was a very coordinated, balanced movement to take away certain spots at certain times. So it looks like he's just flailing, and you try and imitate it, and you pull a groin. But that's why he was the greatest.
Yes.
Because while other goalies were thinking about, like, hey, adopting a butterfly, he was adopting an angry hornet as a style. And it was aggressive in a way that is the best kind of defense. And I miss it. I miss it every day.
It is amazing. It was a great one. All right. Well, to wrap this puppy up, it's a tradition like any other. Ever since sports betting became legal in Detroit, we have, for some odd reason, let Justin be in charge of the Armchair Sports Talk bank account. Yeah. And he's got a lot of good micro bets out there. Jay, like I said at the start of the show, we didn't do a great job choosing when it came to golf this week, but I'm interested to hear what you have. Justin, what is your start? Right,
well, this will be the official 203rd bet that I have done since January. I'm still positive. God. I'm still up $450. Don't worry. But this is the 203rd bet, just so we're keeping track. Maybe I just am.
Ladies and gentlemen, there will be a support line / donation phone number that you can call into and give what you can. It doesn't have to be a lot because clearly it's just going right out the window. But we want you to help where you can because his daughter is really very cute. And we just...
You stop it.
No, but 200 bets, Jay. We're in March. Honestly, Russ, can you configure the math by December 31st? How many bets will Justin have made?
When it came legal, January 15th. Called the 15th. We'll call it the middle of the month.
Let's see it. Just say middle of January. Yeah. So like 2 months ago to the day.
That's 55 days. So. That is 3.69 bets a day. Okay. So 3.69. Well,
that's right.
An entire year, that's 1,347 bets.
What could I lose except everything?
Oh God.
So let's what my motto. My
all right.
Motto,
anyway, yeah, bets your bets. Okay? Your
we
bets.
Got two to look at tonight. One has plus odds, okay. One has negative odds, and I feel like they're both the same, even though the probabilities are different here, right? Tonight, and we went long last time. We're going nice and short. Patrick Kane is playing in his 1,001st game tonight. The odds here on him is 1,001, so plus 1,001. Very cute odds. To score a goal and the Hawks to win against Dallas this evening. That is option number one. Option number two, okay. We're going to bring it on home. The Detroit Pistons are taking on the Charlotte Hornets. We've got the over of 225.5. The evidence I have for that part is that the Hornets have allowed a boatload of points. I think only in recent history, there's only like one game in the past 10 or so that the team has been under 110 points that they've allowed. So they're, you know, getting to that split even of 112 between both teams. It's up to the Pistons to score and to score a lot tonight. So those are the two. Plus 1,001 for Patrick Kane, minus 104 for the over to hit with Charlotte and Pistons tonight.
So to give you a little bit of further stats on the Charlotte and Pistons thing, Charlotte 112.7 points per game, Detroit 108 scoring wise, allowed 113 and essentially 112. So your points allowed are right there at the line, even though the points for falls short. That scares me because, most things in nature follow a bell curve, so I'm going to assume we're at least similar here. So that means, 50% of the time it's going to be above and below. We're already below to start. What were the odds on that one again? Oh,
minus 104.
So then I thought...
You're losing some. Okay, you're losing some value.
My probability is 51%. No, f that. The Kane one's 9%, and while it's not as likely, obviously, he's got 11 goals in 27 games. So it's the NHL. So you're scoring less than half a goal per game, unless you're, Connor McDavid. But it's an implied odds of 9.1%. The best teams aren't going to win more than 60-65% of the time. So. The win, 40%, does he score? Maybe. He's maybe juiced up. Maybe he punched a taxi driver again. I don't know. That's a thing. I think I would rather the big payoff with the Patrick Kane one, because I think those odds are closer to your implied odds, whereas the Charlotte one, being a favorite to score more than they do either team does on average combined, too much can go wrong there.
All right, Eric, Russ has laid it out. Where's your gut pulling?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't listen to a word of it. No. I honestly, I did. I listened to everything you said. I this is one time where I'm gonna kind of like the Ben Wallace thing. I'm gonna go the other way. I personally think Chicago's not that good. Patrick Kane isn't the Patrick Kane of a couple of years ago. He's still a great player. We've had the debate before. He's still probably going to end up being the greatest American-born player of, if not the last 20 years of all time. He's a great hockey player. He's a phenomenal hockey player, but it's that win that gets me. I'm not worried about Patrick Kane netting a goal. I think he can find a way to do that. It's getting the W against Dallas, which on the other side, though, you're telling me, all right, so each team's got to play. Would you say it was
25 and a half, so 226 points in the game.
226. All right, so each team's got to, you know.
Yeah.
I think 113. Yeah. I think that's very doable. The Hornets are giving up a lot of points, but they're also capable of scoring. On the flip side, the Pistons defense is good, but it's not that good that I think they're going to just shut everybody down. But I've also seen enough out of these guys to think if the Hornets defense is that bad, the Pistons could go step for step with them. I really do think they could. I mean, Sadiq Bey scored 30 points a couple nights ago, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. So, I would, if I had to go, I'd say I'd take the over on that. I think it's
right, so what we're going to do here, boys, is I actually already bet both of these, but for the purpose of the show, since we're split, whoever gets it right gets to be a guest pick next week. You get to bring your own odds to the table. So if they both hit, then you're both bringing odds. If neither hit, you get to listen to me again. But if one of you get it right, you get to come to the table and bring something.
Okay. Good luck with your bet.
I'll track it. Don't worry. I got it. I got it.
Russ, Russ, I really hope your bet hits. I really hope you do a great job. those are two good ones. Those are two good ones. Before we wrap this up real quick, I want to ask him. Jay, like I said, we didn't do well. We had a rough go of it, so we're going to keep those picks in, but I want to ask you. We're trending into the weekend now. Who is the is there a new guy you have in mind to take the players? Because we both enjoy this tournament. You and I text back and forth about this one, it seems like, every year. So outside of the guys we took, do you have a outside favorite as maybe a weekend
favorite? Colin Morikawa is my favorite right now, but the one long odds I took, which I think he finished +7 today, was Rory to repeat, because the odds are just too damn good on that. So Rory was my long shot. It ain't happening. But Morikawa is angling towards it right now.
I think the one that's going to end up kicking your butt is the Kisner and Fowler to finish top 40. Top 20.
No,
I don't see
that's,
that. Yeah, I don't
that's
see
money
that
out the door.
I don't see that one. Yeah. I like Morikawa. He's great. He's good. I'm going to go with Shane Lowry. I'm going to take Shane Lowry as the outside guy to surprise. He's playing well, and I think he could do it. It should be interesting. That's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Like I said, had a lot to unpack today, and I'm sure it'll just keep getting crazier and crazier as we get closer and closer to NFL offseason. The draft's coming up. Playoffs just around the corner. So a lot to talk about, but we appreciate you taking the time. My thanks, as always, Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus, the man who I really regret giving.
Let me reiterate that I'm still positive $450. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And the stat man, Russ Ivanek, who constantly, and I really wish he would stop, but sends me the printout once a day of how much money we really are
and
offering
for all
up
that's
every
smart,
day.
I am up
but he makes us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
On zero bets.
This is true.
he's got money in his pocket. That's what it is. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.